You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And wherever you are, go ahead and share tonight's episode with someone, with a friend. And if you're driving in your car, let someone know where they can hear TMG.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. I enjoy discovering and sharing real-life moments of inspiration from everyday people. And this show is about finding moments of inspiration for our everyday lives. And look, and if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. Hey, guys, real quick, don't forget to visit our YouTube page. That's Tell Me Something Good with a capital T. There it is, right there on your screen. And before I go any further, I can't take another step without saying thank you to my biggest supporter, my biggest fan, my lovely wife, Nicole. Hey, girl, how you doing? I know you're watching. I know you're listening. Guys, let me take this time to tell you thank you so much for being a part of the show today. I'm happy that you're here. And whether this is your very first time tuning in, or maybe you've been listening to the show for the 4 years we've been on, let me take this moment to tell you thank you so much for being part of TMG. And well, maybe you're listening in Korea, or maybe you're listening in Japan, or maybe you're listening in Spain, or wherever you're listening to the show around the world. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Come on in. That's right. Come on in and listen to the show, guys. Thank you, guys. I'm excited to be here today. And we have a guest today, guys, that's going to shed some light on some wonderful things. And this is the episode that you did not ever want to miss. This is it. It's going to be good. Guys, before we get started, there's a few things I want to take care of. Now, everybody knows that this show is all about finding moments of inspiration in our everyday lives, like with you and with me. So if you have an inspiring story and you would like to come on the show, guys, drop us an email. That's TELMESOMETHING21@gmail.com. And to Travis, man, I know someone that has an inspiring story or an interesting story, and it would be a great guest on your show. But I didn't want to come on the show, man. I'm a little camera shy. That's okay. You can still drop us an email at TELMESOMETHING21@gmail.com. And you can even remain anonymous if you like. Guys, listen, I have a couple of affiliate sponsors. I'm going to pay their information. Once we do, we're going to come back and we're going to dive into the show. Don't go away. We coming right back.
Walmart is a proud associate sponsor of TMG Tell Me Something Good podcast. Please use the special link, bit.ly/tellmesomethinggood, and visit our sponsor. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link.
Mint Mobile. Sign up and find the cellular plan that's right for you. Use the special link, bit.ly/tellmesomethingmint, and visit our sponsor. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link.
There it is, guys. Please use the special information that will be in the chat. Visit one of our sponsors, guys. Take advantage of some good stuff that's going on. Guys, I know you have been waiting on pins and needles for what we're going to talk about today. And I have it too, guys. Guys, if you have not caught today's topic is, guys, we're going to talk about is Unmasked, Beyond Temptation, Navigating Porn Addiction. And I know you're probably wondering in your minds where we're going to go with this, guys. This is going to be an exciting episode of... Let me throw some words out there to you that you may or may not be familiar with. The first one is oniomania. Yeah, oniomania, O-N-I-O, mania. Oniomania, most people know this as compulsive shopping, or what's most commonly referred to as shopping addiction. Yeah, shopping addiction. Sometimes we may think our loved ones have a shopping addiction because they're always buying something. It's perhaps the most socially acceptable addiction. I'm going to throw another one out there. Let's see if you can get it. AUD, the letters AUD, alcohol use disorder. Now, immediately, the atmosphere changes when the second one is mentioned. So I can mention a shopping disorder, and people say start laughing, and it feels kind of funny. But the moment I say AUD, alcohol use disorder, it changes your perspective. Your whole dynamics, the atmosphere changes, because now you say, that's not really socially acceptable, Travis. That's not something we can get along with. Alcohol use disorder, immediately the atmosphere changes when this one is introduced. Why? Why is that? They're both addictions. Why does the one mention of the second one changes the whole dynamics of everything? Why are some addictions more accepted than others or not seen as detrimental? Our guest today, guys, is Joshua Shea. Listen, he is a former porn addict and now author on the subject and an expert on the subject. He speaks everywhere, helping everyone to break free from the grips of porn addiction and unmask the myths behind it. Guys, do me a favor, if you will. I want to give our guest a huge TMG welcome, guys, for Joshua. Say a Joshua. Man, how you doing, man?
Thank you very much for having me today, Travis. I appreciate it very, 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 very much.
I love his energy. Come on, guys. I love his energy. Listen, you already know, man. Thank you so much for being here today. I'm excited to have you here. And speaking on the subject that we're talking about, Joshua, because we got to dive in, man, and find out why this is something that seems to go under the radar and no one seems to pay a whole lot of attention to it. You know, we could talk about shopping addiction all day and people are smiling and laughing. You know, they'll make jokes about it on sitcoms. But the moment you mention something a little bit seems more serious, like AUD, then yep, people say, oh, yeah, that's terrible. Get that person some help. Get them some counseling. You know, get them some resources. But we don't seem to think that porn addiction is that serious.
No, and I think that the real reason behind that is for so many years, pornography was something that you had to actively seek out to get. You know, I became I was a porn addict for 24 years. I'm coming up on 10 years sobriety here. Thank you very much. When I was a child, the toughest thing, you know, child being 12, 13, 14, the toughest part was finding the pornography. Where could I get my hands on a Playboy? Where could I get my hands on a VCR tape?
Right.
Now we give every 12-year-old kid the smartphone, and we've killed that part of it. So access is so much easier to it, along with the fact that access is so much easier to it compared to 20, 30, 40 years ago. The general attitude of society towards nudity, towards sexuality, towards selling your own body as a side hustle has radically, radically changed.
Oh, man, yeah.
So what we're seeing is when I started as a porn addict, you were looking at 2%, 3% of the population having issues with this. Depending on what study you look at now, that's anywhere from 12 to 18% of the population, women included, who are suffering with this addiction because it's so easy to now access pornography. It's so easy to access hardcore pornography. So easy to access it in the privacy of your own home where you don't have to worry about anybody else finding out about it, that we're starting to see people who do have tendencies towards addiction. Well, you know, you had one of the best introductions that I've ever heard on one of these shows where talking about addiction, addiction is addiction. Whether it's alcohol, gambling, shopping, food, sex, porn, video games, whatever it is, it's not that people are addicted to going to Walmart. It's not that people are addicted to chocolate cake. It's that people are addicted to the chemicals that are created in their mind when they go ahead and engage in that behavior. And that's what people have to recognize. I and those other porn addicts out there, it's not that we like breasts more than any of the other guy. It's not that, you know, the naked people on earth are extra special to us. It's like we have found a way, we have found a coping tool, and this is usually done in early adolescence. We have found a coping tool that allows us to deal with anxiety, that allows us to deal with that allows us to get through another day, and you may discover alcohol does that for you. Someone else may discover shopping does that for them. But addiction is addiction is addiction.
You know what? First of all, thank you for that compliment. But let me say this, man, Joshua. You said something earlier, man, that really hit home. Porn is on the go. You see that? It's a phone. It's on the go. It's no longer, let me go find a man. I remember coming up, I remember coming up where you go into a convenience store and all the little porn magazines was right behind.
Oh, yeah.
Right up front, right where all the mainstream magazines were up front. You could walk in and pick up a porn magazine like you're picking up a newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
It was your daily newspaper right there, and then your favorite porn book was right there.
Yep.
Then they said, oh, no, you have to put it in a plastic bag. Well, the plastic bag was to cover the cover of the magazine, but you knew what it was. Absolutely. Then they said, okay, now it has to be behind the counter where the children can't get it. Now it's on the go. It's wherever we are. The access to it's 24 hours, 7 days a week access to it. And you have people have a side hustle. It's not just, well, you know what, I do hair on the side, or I bake cakes on the side, or I'm the local man who cuts grass on the side. No, my side hustle now is porn, is what I do, selling myself as a side hustle. And people make money off this of a side hustle, but they make money because there is a demand for it. Joshua?
There's a demand, but it actually the demand is starting to plateau in a lot of ways. the average OnlyFans model now makes only $180 a month.
Wow.
That's not, you get those people who, I'm the top 1%, I'm the top 2%. Yeah, but what about the other 98%? What happens when you're sitting at 63% and you're out there trying to sell your body and you're only making $150, $160 a month? Because remember, that's average. Average is $180 a month now. You know, you can collect bottles off the street and make just as much money. But we in this, especially because of the pandemic, this is when it exploded, but we have commodified nudity in a way that has never been done before. We've commodified the sex act in a way that it's never been commodified before. And while we are starting to see a parody, it's amazing the millions of people who are making pornography and making money off their own pornography. It's a DIY industry now.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, you know, how many millions more people are doing this now than were doing it even 10 years ago.
Exactly. And I think part of what we mentioned earlier, the reason some of them are doing it now is because the ease of access to do it. Everybody has a phone. It used to be when cell phones came out. Let me show you how old I am. I remember when cell phones came out, they hit the brick cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
Now cell phones, there's a camera on every phone. There's a microphone on every phone. Everybody is a reporter. Everybody has a camera. Something goes down. What do you see in the news? People have their phone out. Okay. So there's camera access to that information, to that technology. It is out there. So for 24 years, you had this addiction, 10 years sober. Congratulations. I'll say that because it's no difference than any addiction. Addiction is addiction. It is the chemical high that we're seeking. No matter what you're addicted to, it's what's going on up here. It's a coping mechanism, no different than smoking, no different than anything that a person does. So for 24 years, how did this kind of begin? How did this begin to kind of affect your day-to-day decisions in life for 24 years? Imagine somebody smoking, drinking, or whatever it is. How did this begin to affect your everyday or your day-to-day decisions in life?
Well, I was also, it's important to point out, I was also an alcoholic. I did have AUD as well. I was an alcoholic for 22 years. I started with porn at 12. I started with alcohol at 14. And basically, I think I lived a giant life of fear. Everything in my life, I was scared to death to live. Now, I did. And a lot of people would look at my life and say I was an overachiever. I was somebody who was a journalist for many, many years. I got into the business end of publishing. At one point, I actually owned a publishing company that created three magazines. I was the founder of a film festival here in Northern New England. I was also on my local city council. You know, by looking on the outside, you would say that everything was fine with me. You would have said that I was doing very well, but really what I was doing with those activities, because I think I was a workaholic as well, and with the alcohol, with the pornography, I was running from who I really was. The toughest part of the day for me was not being in meetings with very important people, was not, you know, when I was, you know, having to deal with the business world and talking about hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars moving around.
Right.
None of that was, it was when I was by myself at the end of the day, when it was just Joshua Shea sitting on the couch by himself. Wife is in bed. Kids are already asleep. There's no more networking events. There's no more meetings.
Right,
there's
right.
no more putting on this act of Mr. You know, community, that I've got to sit there by myself with myself. And that was always the most uncomfortable thing in the world. That's when I would really get into the alcohol. That's when I'd really get into the pornography, because essentially I lived my life running scared. I had so much anxiety. I had so much fear. I had so much self-loathing that I had to find some way out of it, and those chemicals were the way out of it.
That, you know, man, Josh, man, let me tell you something, Josh. You're hitting on so many wonderful points, and a lot of us, a lot of times, some of us, many of us, with this, that being alone by yourself, having to face yourself and face your own true reality, face who you we really are, can be tough. We can put on a good face for everybody. We can put on a good face for our boss. We can put on a good face for our family, friends, everybody. But that moment when you are by yourself and no one knows you like you know you. you could be whoever you want in front of everybody else. But before this show started, guys, I had a hoodie on. And I told Josh, I said, Josh, I'm going to pull this hoodie off. And I said, I'm going to put my clothes on. I said, I came from being Clark Kent to Superman. And that's how we are. We put on these different personas and these different personalities. But we are who we are.
Well, and if you remember, what I said was, or did you just go from Superman to Clark Kent? Because Clark Kent was not who Superman was. Clark Kent was Superman's alter ego, who the rest of us saw.
Yep.
So, you know, it's the duality of nature. Who are people seeing? Are they seeing you, or are they seeing this caricature of yourself, this best possible caricature where you can create and be whoever you want? That's really the life I lived for a very long time. You know, when I won my city council seat, I should not have run. I was in the midst of my illness. I was in the worst part of my illness. I think part of me ran just to see, am I really pulling the wool over everybody's eyes? Am I well liked? I think it was a popularity contest. It was just a way for me to gauge, was I actually successful in hiding who I was from everybody? Because the real Joshua Shea, nobody should have voted for that asshead. You know, nobody should have voted for him. I ran away with it. I ended up in first place, ended up elected easily. And it was a way of going, my manipulation, my skills of, you know, illusion. Hey, look over here while I'm over here.
How do I do this? Yeah.
That was all very big time. And that's a big part of addiction, is the manipulation of others. And we talk about gaslighting.
Yeah.
The number one person who gets gaslighted in addiction is yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I heard you say something earlier that's very important. You said when you were alone, there were times you really didn't not just like yourself, but you didn't really see yourself in the very most positive light. And a lot of times, when people don't understand those who are on it with addiction, that's one of the first things. It's their self-worth, their self-value. It's not that they want to, you know, it's not that they want what they're going after, but it's what's going on here, the chemicals, what's going on in their head that says, this is going to make you feel good about yourself. This is going to satisfy you right now. And regardless of the consequences, and that's what gets people to understand, well, why don't you just think about that at first? That's not what's on anyone's mind. That's not what's on their mind, because what's triggering here is, I don't like who I am here. And because I can't deal with who I am here, This satisfies that.
Exactly. Exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself. And it's not that it even satisfies it. It's that it dulls it.
It just dulls it. It just numbs the pain.
Right.
It numbs the pain.
I can't tell you what I looked at pornography-wise 5 minutes after I was done. I can't tell you if I had 3 drinks or I had 4 drinks. None of that was important. It wasn't like, you know, people who go out and recreationally drink. It wasn't like, you know, people who will look at porn once in a while. This was absolutely a medicinal thing. I had this, I didn't even, you know, recognize for most of the time that it was actually an addiction, because nobody talked about this as an addiction. I knew I had the alcohol. I thought the pornography was just more bad decision making I made when I was drunk. It wasn't until I started getting help that I recognized it was a completely separate addiction. And like you said, it is absolutely, it's like a magnet. And people say just stop.
Right, right.
Get two magnets together and get them to stop attracting. Get they them won't. To stop attracting. You can't. You can't. And that's the problem, is that, and why so many people are not successful their first, second, third time with recovery, right, is that it's like a magnet. You are hardwired. Your brain, we know this, addiction is a disease, whether you started it or not. Addiction is a disease because it changes the chemistry of your brain. And once that chemistry is changed, it takes a hell of a lot of work to change it back. It's not easy.
Exactly. And I had a new relatives, a family members, man, who or saw people who were addicted to drugs. And you in your mind, you're thinking, why don't they just stop? You know, why can't they, if they know how they feel afterwards, why can't they just stop? It's because of what you just said. When you begin a behavior, and what I've learned is this. A habit is just a behavior. And it, when you begin a behavior, you have now wired your brain. We've now wired our brains to continue that behavior because our brain wants to make things easier for us. It's designed that way. So when we begin a behavior, our brain says, oh, you like that. So I'll create new paths in your mind, so that you can always do that. You can always enjoy that. Now it's wired. Now it is wired. And so now when we try to stop, our brain goes, wait a minute, I'm already wired for this. You're trying to unwire me. That wiring is in. It's deep embedded. It's like a wiring in a home. It is wired in us really good. And we have to break and interrupt that wiring in order to stop the behavior. We talk about a behavior, but it's the wiring. So when we do that behavior, we create new wiring. Whatever it is you're doing, whether you're sowing, you're cutting grass, washing your car, whatever it is you're doing, we create that wiring, and it's tough to stop the action unless we address the wiring.
Exactly. And that's why as a coach these days, that's, you know, like people, how quickly can I get through this? How quickly can I get right over this? Right. It's like, this took you a very long time
to build it,
get to here. It's going to take some time to undo it. It might probably won't take as much time. I liken it to, you know, setting up a stage for a show, you know, building the stage, getting the lights, getting the wire. That all takes a long time. Breakdown does not take as much time when you break down after a show.
You gotta put it together.
You still have to take the time. You still have to do the correct process.
That's right.
You still have to pack things away. You have to do things the right way. And it's not something that is overnight to be able. Thankfully, the brain has this neuroplasticity, which allows us to, you know, change the way things are, but it doesn't happen overnight. It takes some time. It takes a lot of dedication.
It takes time. So here you are. You're on your city council. Things on an uprise. Looks like everything's going great for you. How did it impact your career when you were, you know, publishing books and city council? And were there times you felt trapped or ashamed to talk to anyone?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think most people had an idea that I had an issue with alcohol. That's hard to hide. You know, I would drink during the day quite often. You smell of alcohol. Sometimes you slur. Sometimes, you know, you walk a little funny. It's not easy to hide the alcohol. It is easy to hide the porn. But there were times where I know that I went to city council meetings and I'd had a few too many drinks. I know there were times where I had to cancel a meeting with a potential advertiser or a potential sponsor for something that I was doing business-wise because I'd had too much to drink. It really did run my life. It was a matter of how am I feeling? If I'm not feeling good, I then needed to go and, you know, especially during the day, have some drinks. If it was at night, I might use pornography. But I would have to, you know, get myself to the point that I was okay to deal with people because I just didn't like my life. I did not like what I was doing. I did not like how I was behaving. I did not like who I was as a person, despite the fact that, yes, I could show you a wall of trophies and plaques in my office where everybody tells me what a wonderful person I was. I didn't have those trophies and plaques up in my office to impress you when you walked in. Mm. I had them there to remind me that I was somebody okay.
Wow.
And I was somebody different, that I was somebody good, that at least all of these other people like me. If I don't like me, at least all these other people do. That's why I had the trophies. That's why I had the awards and the certificates up in my office, was to remind myself that I wasn't a piece of dirt. But I, you know, got through every day, put on my little happy face, put on my, you know, hey, I'm a publisher, I'm a city councilor, I'm a community leader, let's keep going, everything's great.
Right. Yeah, let's keep the party going.
And I know, and you know, the funny thing is, on paper, I did a lot of wonderful stuff. On paper, I did a lot of very altruistic stuff, but when you got to the core, I wasn't behaving the way I was because it was the right thing for the community or I was doing good. It was just a matter of survival, and that's how I knew how to survive. And I was able to carve out this little niche where, in essence, I was able to get thousands and thousands of people to enable me because they just kept telling me how wonderful I was, even though inside I was rotting from the inside out.
Wow. Yeah. I keep hearing a lot, man, Josh, about a lot of it has to do with our value and how we see ourselves. A lot of times we surround ourselves with people who are enablers, or a lot of things, they can be secret enablers. They don't know they're enabling us.
Right.
When you got elected to city council, thousands of people voted for you, and we have thousands of people cheering for us and patting us on the back. And inside, we could be rotting. We can have a lot of things going on inside of us that we aren't addressing, haven't addressed, don't talk about. You say, yeah, man, I was ashamed to talk about it because talking about it was not really you talking about the issue. It means we had to face ourselves as people. We have to look ourselves in the mirror and say, I don't like what I see. I don't like who you are. And there was a time in my life, Josh, man, I really did not like me. I did not like, man. And people say, Travis, there's no way in the world you could not like yourself. You're so energetic. You're so positive. There was a time in my life I really did not like myself, Joshua. I mean, really did not like myself. And poor decision, bad decisions, everything all came. I told my wife this one time, we was talking. I said, I can trace back all the bad decisions I made, Karen, from how I value myself. How we value ourselves plays a huge part in the type of decisions that we make. How we see ourselves plays a huge part in the decisions that we make. So a lot of times we see people who are addicted to porn or has a lot to do with who they see themselves as. I'm not talking about casual watchers. I'm talking about it's an everyday addiction, just like AUD or anything else. And I got to say this, man. I got to ask you this question.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Who am I really hurting anyhow as an addict? You know, it's just me, man. Why is that such a big problem? You know, why is it a problem that I'm an addict? This is my home. I can do what I want to. This is my cell phone, my tablet, my laptop. Who am I really hurting as an addict?
Well, I mean, you're hurting your family. You're hurting your friends. You're creating an environment where people who care for you are watching you spiral and watching it get worse and worse. And that's not good. I mean, I know that my last year and a half of addiction, My wife has told me she looked at me more as a roommate than anything else, because she almost had to mentally unhook herself because it was so difficult watching me spiral downward. And it was so difficult watching me fall apart. And that's the thing, is that keep in mind, I also ran a company. Every employee that I had suffered because of my addictions. The people who read my magazines, the people who went to the film festival, the people who were the taxpayers, I was not my best possible self when I was creating this. Or when I was making these things, they were getting shortchanged because of my decision-making. And when you talk specifically about porn addiction, we also have to recognize that porn addiction and just porn in general and how much it has access to the younger people, this is how they are getting their sexual education these days.
Right.
And there was a study several years ago, it was a college did this study, and it found that in looking at 100 of the most popular videos on two different adult websites, it was 97% of the videos had some kind of aggression, whether it be verbal, physical, or sexual, toward the female of the scene. Now, that same college then went and talked to college-age females and said, when you've been in sexual situations consensually, has the guy ever got a little too aggressive to the point you've had to stop him? Whether it was, you know, putting a hand around your throat or getting a little rough or calling you names that maybe you didn't want to be called. And 40% of the college-age women said, yes, I have been involved in a consensual sexual exchange where the guy got too aggressive. Where do you think that the guys are learning about how to behave in a certain situation when it comes to, you know, sexual behavior with women?
Right,
you're learning it from pornography. There's one of the things that I learned several years ago when I was giving a presentation at a college, and I've had this repeated to me since, is that there are a lot of young women who will not engage with virgin men because they know that they are going to basically just be cosplaying a porn star, and they don't want to have to deal with that. They don't want to have to retrain them. They don't want to say, no, you don't talk to me that way. No, you don't throw me down on the bed. No, you don't act like you see pornography. So that's a big problem, because we are raising a generation of young men and young women, because many young women see this and think these are the cues they're supposed to accept.
That's right. This is supposed to be acceptable. This is what you're supposed to do.
Exactly. So this, to me, even more than the addiction, this to me is a major, major issue, that we are taking our cues, our sexual behavioral cues, from pornography, and the behavioral cues that we see are so extreme that it's not going to have a healthy sexual society. We're not going to be able, we're not going to develop the way that we're supposed to.
It sounds like what it does, Josh, it desensitizes people to certain acts and certain behaviors. Let me throw some metrics, guys. The human trafficking hotline identifies pornography. They've identified 939 cases. This is just what they've identified. I'm sure there's more. As the top-ranked industry for sex trafficking, viewers of pornography help to create the demand for sex trafficking, and sex trafficking provides supply for pornography. So there's cases they've identified. I'm sure there's more cases that they have not identified, have not come forth with. Basically, what it's saying is that sex trafficking and pornography go hand in hand. There's no way around it, because there's a demand for it, and because, like any business, which has now become a business, you know, you have that supply and that demand. And of course, the demand for pornography, and you stop seeing people as humans. We stop dehumanizing people. When we start dehumanizing people, we start seeing them as objects and commodities to be traded and to be sold at whim, at ease. Earlier, man, we drew a comparison between two types of addictions. Porn addiction is well hidden. It's kind of well be hidden behind a mask of secrecy. Shh, don't tell nobody. Shh, don't talk about it. You don't talk about that. You don't say the porn word out in public. Shh, there's no way you could be addicted to porn. It's a hush kind of a thing.
If that's an addiction, that's the one I want.
That's it. If that's the worst you got, bring it on. And that's what we see it as. And when we talk about porn in our culture and in our television, it's a ha ha until it becomes a problem. It's a laughing matter until it makes somebody that we care about start crying. The porn addiction is well hidden behind this kind of massive hush and secrecy and shame, but it's growing while being overlooked. Isn't this just kind of somebody might say, isn't this just a personal problem? You know, this is just somebody's personal thing. You know, isn't that kind of a personal thing?
Yeah, absolutely it's a personal thing, but when so many persons are having these issues, it's time to talk about why this is sweeping across America. We're sweeping pornography addiction under the bed right now, and I know you'll remember this because you're my age. Remember back in the 1980s when we had Nancy Reagan running around talking about drug, just say no, just turn your head the other way. Those people who use drugs are gross. Those people who use drugs are less than. They're from the wrong side of the tracks. Let's ignore them. Yeah. So what happened? You know, you can go back to cop shows of the 70s where they're talking about people using opium and people using, you know, all these different drugs. You can go back to rap of the 1980s where they're talking about abusing Vicodin. You're going to tell me that the opioid and the opiate crisis, because that was the big news before the before the pandemic. If you remember, everybody suddenly cared about opiates and opioids. All of a sudden, despite the fact that we knew this was a problem for 30 years prior, it's just that it finally hit mainstream America. It finally hit white-collar America. It finally made its way across the bad side of the tracks. And suddenly, everybody was caring about it. Well, we have, and you know, then the pandemic hit, and opioid and opiates, that's no longer a fad anymore. Still a huge problem, just no longer a fad to care about
exactly.
It because we moved on from other things. We are a reactive society. We are not a proactive society. All of the statistics are there right now to show us that we are due for a sexual reckoning right around the corner if we don't take care of this. But we are not a proactive society. We are a reactive society. Yes, it does have to do with everybody individually, but everybody individually makes up the populace. Right now, how many people look at porn? Well, when it comes to men, the last statistic I saw, and I trust this, 91.5% of men look at pornography at least once a month. Not to say they're addicted, but 91.5% of men look at it at least once a month.
Entertain it.
60.2% of women look at pornography at least once a month. In my practice, I have my female clients doubling in number year after year now as more and more women, because hey, you know what? Basically, you know, the equipment's a little different, but the desire is the same. The issues are the same. When I'm coaching, what it all comes down to is, why did you become this person? If you stop using, yes, your brain in time is going to heal. We know this. Right. That's wonderful. That's almost the easy lifting part of this. The difficult part that I deal with as a coach day after day is, why did you end up this way? And that's what I had to go through. I went through two different rehabs, one for my alcohol, one for the porn. Mm-hmm. And that's what I learned there. What trauma happened? What is your story? What is the story that you started to tell yourself? What coping mechanisms did you not develop? Why did you end up the way you are? And you know what? People will look at you as a porn addict and a pervert, and you're
label you, call you, all kinds of things,
and all kinds of these things. But it's just, you just happen to find that as your coping mechanism. It could have just as easily been food. It could have just as easily been cocaine. It could have just as easily been something else. It happened to be pornography for you that doesn't reflect upon you negatively as a person.
Let me ask you something, guys. Let me say this to you guys real quick. Everybody look at that's watching this right now. Look at me real close. What are you coping with right now? Because all of us as a society we're coping with something. What are you dealing with right now? What are you coping with right now? What's talking to you in your ears? What is it that you're hearing when you're by yourself? Because what we're coping with, how we deal with that, the choices we make with what we're coping with, is what everybody else is going to have to deal with. What we don't conquer in private, someone's going to have to deal with in public. Everything that we see on the news is because someone, we couldn't deal with it in private. We couldn't cope with it in private, Josh. We couldn't deal with it in private. So now it's made the 6 o'clock news. Now it's made the 5 o'clock news. Now your wife and your children and your family are dealing with what we could not cope with in private. What are you coping with? I heard you say, Josh, that we had to trace it back to what triggered it, what started, what put us on this path. Because who we are, who that person is there, that addicted person, that's not who they really are. We're not being our best selves. We're not giving society our best. We're not giving our families, our loved ones, our very best, because this addiction is getting the best of me. Now, you said, man, that it's everybody's problem, because a lot of times we like to think it's just a personal problem. It's just, you know, who am I hurting if I watch a little porn? Who am I hurting if I decide to do that? Guys, keep in mind, one thing drives another. You said earlier, Josh, there's no way you could have two magnets in proximity and keep them from not wanting to pull to each other. So it does impact the things and people around us. You once said that this is the addiction that no one talks about. Yeah. You know, you said this addiction no one likes to talk about. Why? What keeps it so well hidden behind the mask, man?
Because at the core, it's naked people doing naked things. And we are not that far removed from a society where any talk of sexuality was absolutely forbidden.
Yeah.
And we can go back to, you know, the 1930s, the 1940s, when a bikini was this much skin on the stomach. We have not, you know, we are not that far removed from a society where you couldn't say the word sex on television.
Yeah.
You know, we're not that moved from a society where if there was a breast in a film, and I'm talking a mainstream film, it would get slapped with an R or an X rating. We are not that far removed from a very, very conservative society. I mean, look at the people who are making the decisions in Washington. It's a bunch of men in their 70s and 80s who remember the 1950s.
Like it was yesterday.
Exactly, exactly. And it's I'm not saying that they had a better or worse value system, but they had a different value system.
Correct.
And I think that, you know, naturally we see things evolve over time, but we're not getting direction from the older folks. We're not getting money poured into research about this addiction from the older folks, because they still have that pornography equals sex freak mentality, despite the fact they're probably watching themselves based on what the statistics say. You know, it's still the idea that it is such a taboo that, oh, well, people who look at pornography, that's because they can't get a partner in real life.
Oh, the weirdos.
People who look at pornography, it's weirdos. When the great majority of people who watch pornography don't have an issue with it, but we have to recognize they're still watching.
Exactly.
It is something that people are using in society. I just gave those numbers, the 91% of men, the 60% of women. the vast majority of us are looking at pornography. That doesn't make us fiends. That doesn't make us freaks. That doesn't make us perverts. Being interested in depictions of sexuality is completely normal, especially when you're a young person. And when you're a young person and you're going through issues like many young people do, sometimes that can become your go-to coping mechanism. I wasn't going to become a gambling addict because at 12 years old, no one was letting me into a casino.
Right.
I wasn't going to become a cocaine addict because at 12 years old, I didn't even know where to buy it. What could I get my hands on? Well,
right now.
Yes, that little convenience store down the street, they never had any problems selling me any beer when I was 14 years old. That video store, that Blockbuster was killing. They didn't have as long as I put my $3 down, they would rent me anything in the store. They were just trying to survive. So they didn't care about the 12, 13-year-old kid riding on his bike home from school who was getting a couple porno videos every day. They were just trying to survive, just like I was just trying to survive. You know, and if you're going to tell me that I was a bad 13-year-old kid for doing this, I was a pervert 13-year-old kid for doing this, I'd bring you back to my life and say, dude, this was coping. This was escape. This was just me trying to deal with all of the stuff that went down at that point and when I was younger and still trying to make sense of a lot of the abuse and a lot of the trauma that I went through when I was younger. And yeah, why was it porn? Because even then it was accessible. Now that it's so much more accessible, how can we be surprised that so many of our young men and our young women are turning towards it? We can't be. And when it, like you said, when it comes to making the stuff, well, when you and I were in high school, there was no social media.
Nope.
If there was a picture of the super sexy cheerleader and her super sexy quarterback boyfriend, if there was a picture of them from the beach in their bikini and short shorts, that thing would have got passed around like a joint cafeteria table.
Everywhere.
Everybody would have wanted to see that thing. Now, with Instagram, with TikTok, we've got 15, 16-year-olds who are half naked all over social media. What is the real difference between the day of your last 17 and then your 18th birthday? Well, now you're legally an adult, and now we don't have any real societal taboos. But, well, just say drop that top and charge $20 a pop. You'll have $1,000 by the end of the day.
Yep. That's what they
say. If you don't have a problem with nudity, if we're not raising people to respect their bodies more, well, that's what happens. And that's what we see in society. We've gone from a crazy conservative society to a crazy liberal society. And we've got to find some kind of place in the middle that's healthy. We're always going to have pornography. I don't fight against pornography. That would be like banging my head against a wall. I'm never going to try to do that. But what we need to do is we need to have a society that's educated. You can't tell me that anybody who picks up any, you know, kid or anybody who picks up a cigarette these days knows that it's bad for them. Whether they do it or not, that's them.
They know it.
They do it or not, they're educated. The problem that I have, and one of the things that I'm out there doing, why I come on shows like this, is to educate, is because if you're going to use, that's up to you. But what you need to do is understand that there are a host of negatives that can come with this. And that's what we need to do. That's why we need this in the health classes in high school. That's one day of talking about this. Hell, you talk to 13 and 14-year-old boys about porn-induced erectile dysfunction. Mm-hmm. You tell them they keep watching porn and in 5 or 6 years, their penis may not work correctly. I think we're going to do wonders for the numbers about porn addiction.
I'm pretty sure you would.
It comes back down to it's naked people doing naked things, and we don't want to talk about that because that's perverted.
Even though we want to talk about it, even though we're thinking about it, we don't want to talk about it.
No, because then you have to admit you have some knowledge. And admitting you have some knowledge about porn, it's to me, I always liken it to the word Hitler. Nobody wants to say the word Hitler.
But you know the guy existed.
Yeah, nobody wants to say the word Hitler because just saying the word Oh, well, you must support him if you say it out loud. And that's the same with the word pornography. Oh, you must be okay with pornography if you say the word. No, and that's what happens in a society that turns its head the other way. Right. We need to pay attention to this. We need to be able to grow up and have some adult conversations about pornography, about what it's doing, especially these days, to the youngest people, and figure out a way to educate them. And yes, there are always going to be people who are interested in it. That's just the way of the world. But we need to have that education component behind it.
Absolutely. You said a couple of things. One, you said you were going to the store, you buy the magazine, we go to the store and buy the magazine, or you go to the video store and buy the video and get the video. They were trying to survive, you were trying to survive. So it was a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
It was symbiotic. Everything was feeding, but the word I kept hearing was survive. And guys, what you understand, whenever you are addicted to porn, whatever your addiction is, you're just trying to survive. So if we see someone who's addicted to pornography, before we label them as a creep, as a jerk, or what are they trying to survive? Let me tell you something. Whatever your addiction is, you're trying to survive something. I don't know what it may be right now, but you're trying to survive something. What is it that you're trying to survive? And that's what it goes back to, back to the value of who we are. And what are you facing that you're not telling somebody about? What are you running away from? What's chasing you? What thought, what feeling, what emotion, what trauma is chasing you? Because in order to get past this thing, Josh, we got to understand what's chasing us. What are we trying to survive? And tell us a little bit about your book that's out. I'm reading this book about porn addiction for a friend. Tell us a bit. I think this is it right here.
Yep, that's the book. That's my latest book that's out there. I always said that if I was going to write, this is my fourth book, but it's the first one about, porn addiction, dealing it with yourself. And what I tried to do is I tried to create essentially the first one or two sessions that someone would have with me in book form, which is to be able to hear stories from other people, which is able to read the symptoms of pornography addiction, and then get some basic techniques to start to combat it. And this book will certainly not be the end-all be-all for you, but I'm hoping that for a lot of people, it's their first step towards healing. It's their first step towards identifying, yes, I have a problem. It's kind of funny, or ironic, I should say. Probably 1 out of 8 people who come to me in an initial session don't have a porn addiction. And by the end of it, it's like, dude, you are not an addict. I think it's awesome that you're worried about it, but you don't have an actual addiction. Now, those other 7, a lot of them read the book and say, I need to talk to this guy because, gee, I fall into this category. What's next? What am I going to do? The important piece is that you understand you have this issue. You have to accept that you have this issue. You have to recognize that, again, it doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you a weak person. It doesn't make you a weird person. It's just what happened. It's how you developed to this point, and then a matter of what you're going to do moving forward. And there are plenty of different things you can do. You can read books. You can look at YouTube videos. You can go to 12-step groups. There's plenty of other group therapies. There's, going to a therapist or a coach like myself. There's going to rehabs. There's a lot that you can do. And it's just a matter of crafting a recovery journey for yourself that works for you. 12 steps doesn't work for everybody. That's okay. And therapy doesn't work for everybody. That's okay. Reading about it doesn't work for everybody. That's okay. But there are so many ways that you can recover out there that it really is on your shoulders, and you owe it to yourself. I can tell you now, coming up here, as we record this, I'm just a couple weeks away from my 10-year sobriety line, and I can tell you that life is so much better on this side of the fence. Life is spiritually, emotionally, socially,
intellectually, everything is so much better on this side of the fence. It was hard. It was difficult work. It was, you know, a heck of a lot of heavy lifting. But I am a better, healthier person than I've ever been. And I just wish that anybody dealing with addiction, whether it's porn or any other kind, find that internal spark, find that internal flame, and then feed it. Just keep feeding it. Keep feeding it. Let it blaze. And use that power, use that energy to escape addiction. Because if I can escape addiction, if I can escape two addictions at the same
time. Not one, two.
If I can escape two addictions at the same time, anybody can.
Wow. I heard you say something about using that fire, using that thing to inspire you. What do you use to inspire and encourage yourself to keep your freedom?
I, a lot of times, just go back about 12, 13 years and think about that guy who everybody on the outside saw as he had everything together and he was dying on the inside. Now, nobody pays attention to me whatsoever. And it's wonderful because the guy actually is feeling great on the inside. And that's what I remember, is that I remember how unhappy I truly was. I remember how distant I was from my wife and my kids. I remember just how miserable I was. And that's not to say I don't have difficult days now. That's not to say that there isn't, you know, some depression here and there now. I'm a human being like anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that I don't have this albatross of porn and alcohol
hanging all around your neck,
absolutely dragging me down, the fact that I don't have that, I feel so much healthier in so many ways.
Josh, this is such a healthy conversation that we're having about porn and porn addiction. It is a word that society does not want to hear out loud, but it exists. The word porn exists just like the word floor. It exists. You can try to overlook the word floor, but it's still there. I want to share everybody with your website here. Let me get that up here real quick. Everybody, can you see that there? Yeah. Well, you can't see it until I share it, Travis. There you go. There it is right there. That's your website. That is your website right there.
Yep, thatcorncoach.com. Because we can't say the word porn on social media yet, because God forbid. So it is thatcorncoach.com.
That is exactly where I am. This is here, guys. This is where you can contact Josh right here. There he is giving the speech. And you've done a lot of TEDx talks on this.
Yep.
Concerning this very nature right here and this subject right here, and why it's so important that we pay attention to porn addiction and this subject. So we're so grateful that you do take the time to do that. So we can reach out to you on thatcorncoach.com, also on your social media sites as well. Am I correct?
I am That Corn Coach just about everywhere. So the TikTok or Instagram or Clapper, or, you know, looking me up on LinkedIn, you can find me with That Corn Coach.
Guys, Joshua, thank you so much for being here today and for sharing what you shared with us. I'm going to ask you this question because I ask all of my guests this question as in closing. What is one thing that you could say that would encourage someone right now who either in recovery from porn addiction or trying to make it to that road of recovery and getting there? What's something that encouraging you would say to someone?
Well, I would say that it does not reflect who you are as a person. And that's the most important part. Your addiction does not reflect you. People often will say to me, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed by some of the porn that I look at. It's like, you are not the porn you look at, and your addiction does not define who you are. And the final thing I'd just like to say is for anybody out there who is believing that, yeah, a lot of people have porn addiction, but it can't be me.
Mm.
Wipe that out of your mind. I know I deal with that. It can be. I have met people as young as 14, 15 years old as into their late 70s.
Wow.
Men, women, every color of the rainbow, every religion, all over the world. I see clients in 8 different time zones around the world right now.
Wow.
That's how big this is. There is nobody who is immune from this. If you think you may have a problem with porn addiction, go deeper, because that's something that, you know, you cannot, because, oh, I'm a white guy, or, oh, I'm a woman, or, oh, I'm a Christian. I'm sorry, but it knows no bounds. It is just like the alcohol. It knows no bounds. It can hit anybody.
Crosses all boundaries is what I'm hearing, guys. Yeah. Crosses all boundaries. Guys, it's about that time. And as always, it's been a real blast. Thank our very special guest, Joshua, for being here today with us, guys. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show and for watching. Guys, listen, you can stream your favorite podcast episode, guys, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, guys, Pandora, and so many more. As I get out of here and get ready, guys, listen, thank you for tuning in every Thursday, 6:30 p.m. Central, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, to listen to the show. Guys, and as always, in parting, if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good. I'm out of here. I got to go. Peace.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.